TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. The Murders at Kent State. This is the first of an occasional series on the place that has become TUC Radio's new home, Mendocino County, Northern California. Here's the connection between a small local newspaper in Anderson Valley, a rural radio station, KZYX, a woman, Laurel Krause, living on the Pacific Ocean near a former logging mill town, and a veteran radio programmer, Jeffrey Blankford. They are connecting to events that shook the world in 1970, the murder of four young students on the campus of Kent State University in Ohio. Also referenced in this rebroadcast are filmmaker Michael Moore, attorney William Kunstler's daughter Emily, and Congressman Dennis Kucinich. A piece of living history assembled in the mountains of Northern California. Here's Jeffrey Blankford hosting his show on KZYX in May 2012.
Well, shortly after my last program, I opened the pages of the April 25th Anderson Valley Advertiser to find a letter to editor Bruce Anderson from Fort Bragg resident Laurel Krause. She was writing about an important piece of new information she had obtained regarding the murder of four students and the wounding of nine others protesting President Nixon's expansion of the Vietnam War into Cambodia at Kent State in Ohio 42 years ago, this past May 4th. Killed by National Guard troops that day was Laurel's sister, Allison. Her letter was part of a general appeal to the mainstream and alternative media to reopen the Kent State case and, if possible, bring those responsible to justice or, at the very least, determine who gave the orders for the only incident in which American anti-war protesters were deliberately shot and killed. I phoned Laurel to find out if there had been any response from national media and learned that not only had there been no response, but that the Obama administration's Justice Department had decided just 3 days earlier not to reopen the case despite solid evidence that the Ohio Guardsmen had been ordered to fire at the students by their commander. And you'll get a chance to hear that evidence. And I'll get Laurel Krause on the phone. Let's listen to CNN's reporting on the decision of the Justice Department not to reopen an investigation into the Kent State shootings.
Tear gas and bullets 42 years ago this week at Kent State University. Four students were killed, nine others injured, when Ohio National Guardsmen opened fire during an anti-war protest. Alan Canfora took a bullet through one of his wrists. In a sense, he says he's been wounded again. Just before this week's anniversary of the event, the Justice Department sent Canfora a letter denying a request to reopen the case.
The central mystery since 1970 has always been, was there or was there not an order to fire?
A federal civil rights case against the guardsmen was dismissed in 1979. The Justice Department now reveals the FBI destroyed an original reel-to-reel recording of the shooting. But a digitally enhanced review of a copy of those tapes has revived the question. Audio engineer Stuart Allen analyzed the tape for the Cleveland Plain Dealer. He claims the fatal volley was preceded by four shots from an unknown source.
Fourth gunshot, most important, here's the echo from it.
70 seconds later, Stewart says there's a command to fire, followed by 67 gunshots. Listen again.
I don't know about you, but I get chills when I hear that.
The Justice Department calls its own review of the words and sounds unintelligible with no consensus. Allen says this isn't about prosecuting anyone in the National Guard.
It's about setting history right.
We're seeking healing, and we're seeking reconciliation.
Ken Forrett and his supporters plan to ask the Justice Department to take another look, meet with Ohio's governor, and take legal action, hoping the mystery surrounding the shootings may one day be solved. Susan Candiotti, CNN, New York.
And I have on the phone with me Laurel Krause from Fort Bragg, whose sister Allison was killed by one of the shots we heard.
It's devastating. 67 shots of live ammunition at unarmed student protesters. My sister was 343 feet away from the people shooting.
I saw a picture in the Cleveland Plain Dealer, a picture I had never seen before of the guardsmen firing and one man standing there with an automatic. It was clear these people were not under attack, as we were told. It was chilling. I listened to that a number of times, and I can hear the call to fire, the command to fire. Tell us about what you've been doing and the response of the family and the efforts that have been made and the team that you've assembled at truthtribunal.org to keep the Kent State issue alive and bring justice and truth to it.
We cycle back a little bit to Stuart Allen analyzing that tape. You'll hear he talks about that fourth shot at the very beginning of that CNN short. It's a under 3-minute short that's available at CNN. Anyone can go look at it. And it's film footage. He talks about a fourth shot, and that fourth shot is actually very key here because 70 seconds before the command that you heard, and everyone can hear it on that tape, it's very clear. There was also the sound of sniper fire shot by an FBI informant in the crowd. He was there. He was the only civilian with a gun on campus. He handed the gun off to the Kent police immediately after the May 4th massacre. And basically, he has since been protected by the government ever since and continues to work in covert measures. His name is Terry Norman. He lives in North Carolina on his little mountaintop. And he enjoys security and protection from the U.S. government. And it's our feeling that he actually created the sound of sniper fire so that the guard would then shoot at students and substantiate their reason to shoot. They all pointed to the sound of sniper fire. They were being shot at. Well, they were being shot at over the hill by an FBI agent.
So this was a typical agent provocateur.
People call them false flag.
Yeah.
And false flag was one of the defining moments, you know, at Kent State. It actually it allowed for everything to continue and go as planned. I believe that some of the National Guardsmen on the hill there were very they were privy to what was being planned, and others were not. But they were all handed out their live ammunition, you know, about 15 minutes before the shots. So, you know, they knew what they were doing. It was planned. It was a very successful program for COINTELPRO, the FBI. And our Justice Department refuses to take a look at it. They're pointing to forensic studies of the tape from 1974. And they also mention in their report to Alan Canforo, who was mentioned in the news clip, and to Dennis Kucinich, who has come out swinging on this. They mentioned that the FBI Cleveland office actually destroyed the original tape in 1979 as soon as the settlement was met. As soon as we settled, we received $15,000 for my sister and a statement of regret. The day after the statement, they then said to us that this was not an apology, one of the high-ranking National Guardsmen. So they've continued to kick us in the shins and tell us to go away, and we're not.
What caused me to call you was reading in the AVA of April 25th how you received a phone call from the son of one of the person who was in charge of the guns for the Ohio National Guard that day.
Right.
Tell us what happened, what he told you.
Well, he found me on Facebook. I'm on Facebook. And please, everyone, you can go to the Kent State Truth Tribunal on Facebook. Right now, Facebook is limiting my access. But if you share our posts, you really will help us get the word out. Facebook is one of my main methods, as well as Michael Moore. I blog there. He contacted me, and after a lot of back and forth, because we were all very concerned about talking to each other, and he let me know that his father was one of the high-ranking officers of the ONG, Ohio National Guard, that he was in charge of actually taking care of the weapons that were fired that day. He arrived at his office the next morning. You know, all the weapons were there that were shot. He took them all out of the office. He assembled them into a shipment of over 10,000 units of weapons from the state of Ohio going to NATO, and they were quickly moved out of the country, never to be found again. He has said with glee and a lot of pumping of chest that no gun that was ever fired at Kent State will ever be found again. And I believe what he said is true. That was the high-ranking Ohio National Guardsman.
And it took a lot of guts for his son to make that phone call.
He suffers from post-traumatic stress as much as any of us do. You know, and the Ohio National Guard sons that are out there and daughters, they have, you know, a lot of guilt that they're dealing with, even though their parents may not. They always get rid of the evidence, and they're continuing to do that. They got rid of the Struby tape, this Kent State tape that was made by a student on his window ledge. He picked up everything, and they got rid of the original, and they admitted it in these letters that they just sent out, you know, 2 weeks ago, which is confounding. For what reason are they admitting that they got rid of the evidence? So what happened is I decided to plead to President Obama about, you know, taking a look at this and going beyond it, you know, just, you know, doing the right thing and healing this wound. This is a severe wound in a whole generation. You know, they delivered post-traumatic stress from Kent State to all the baby boomers. And still, every baby boomer I ever speak to, everyone always says, you know, I just get so sad about all that. I just feel so powerless. Well, that is how post-traumatic stress works. They delivered it to a whole, you know, generation. So I just decided to write to President Obama again. I've written to him many times. My mother kept after me. She said, please let him know that he has two daughters, that his family is just like ours. My sister Allison and I were the only two children of Arthur and Doris Krause. They took away my sister. She wanted President Obama to be able to relate to that and take it home to him. I haven't heard from him. He hasn't responded. Actually, the letter went viral. I think a lot of people read it. I hope that everyone will. You can go to Google and you can Google Kent State letter to President Obama. It will come up. But since President Obama did not respond, we took it to the next level. And now we have written to The Hague. And we're asking for the International Criminal Court to hear the Kent State matter. Obviously, in America, truth and justice just does not matter.
I read that, and you can find that letter to the International Court, Criminal Court in The Hague, on Mendo Coast Current.
Also at michaelmoore.com.
At michaelmoore.com.
He is my main conduit, my little blog, you know. It's just organic, and it's on safe, renewable energy and truth at Kent State. It has, you know, very little readership, but Michael Moore has quite a bit more, and it's been we've been able to benefit from his broadcast because at this point, this is a censored story in America. It has been censored since day one.
Is it possible? I know you have a team, including the daughter of the great lawyer William Kunstler, Emily Kunstler, working on your Truth Tribunal team. And with Michael Moore, is there a movie in the offing?
Well, you know, basically, let me give you a little bit of background on Kent State Truth Tribunal. That's our project. We started it in the 40th year. That was 2010. And we held three tribunals, one in Kent, Ohio on May 1, 2, 3, 4. We got about 70 testimonials filmed by filmmaker Emily Kunstler. She's the daughter of William Kunstler, and she created a fabulous film on her father called Disturbing the Universe, William Kunstler, with her sister Sarah. Emily came forward and graciously offered to become co-founder of the Kent State Truth Tribunal. She handled all the filming. We also live-casted on Michael Moore, and we were his first live-cast. So we held three tribunals, one in Kent, one in San Francisco in August, and then one back in New York City. The New York City centerpiece was us filming Stuart Allen. At this time, we have about 70-plus testimonials in the can. We're awaiting funding. If anyone wants to give any help to us, you can go to truthtribunal.org. This is funded solely by contributions and mostly me. but basically, we're going to be hoping to do something with this footage and have these move from outside the can and into the public.
If you haven't guessed by now, my guest is Laurel Krause, who lives in Fort Bragg, and we're talking about what happened, of course, in Kent State 42 years ago, where four students were killed, one of them who was her sister, Allison. How old was Allison when she was killed?
She was 10 days into her 20th year, so she was 19 years old. We had just visited with her on campus, and we were partying on Kent State campus on April 23rd, which was her birthday. It was just after Earth Day. Buckminster Fuller was on campus. He had erected a geodesic dome. It was a beautiful time, and that was the last time we ever saw her alive. And no one came to help us. Actually, some people did. Peter Davies, one of the authors, he wrote The Truth About Kent State. It's the leading book on Kent State. He came to help us, my father specifically, my mother, because we sued the government for the next 10 years. You know, as I mentioned, in the end, we had to settle because the wounded students wanted money to help them with their medical problems. One fellow was in a wheelchair for the rest of his life, Dean Taylor, and there were 9 wounded, 4 dead in Ohio. John Adams also came to help us from the Methodist Church Social Concerns. Some people came, but most people came to us and they said things like, they should have shot more, straight to our faces.
They should have shot more.
That's America.
Do you think Kent State was singled out for a particular reason, or Ohio has been a center?
Well, you know, basically in Ohio, they have the law that allows for the Ohio National Guard to carry live ammunition. So that worked out really good for them. They were looking at Yale University as well, from what we've been able to, you know, track. But, you know, that was Ivy League and, you know, too many one percenters there. So that didn't work.
Exactly. Too many one percenters. And if one of them got killed, that would upset the whole apple cart, right? Or
right.
Wounded.
But you see, you know, this was very well planned. They did it with white students at Kent State. Yeah. And then 10 days later, they did Jackson State so that they covered both white and black students, so that they could totally disengage, give post-traumatic stress to a whole generation. It has worked, it has held, and everyone is still dealing with that wound that felt Kent State.
And school children today don't learn about it.
Well, basically when the FBI planned it and executed it and then wrote up the reports about it, you know, they told their side of the story, and it's never, ever been told any other side of the story. Their side of the story, the FBI side of the story, is what you'll find in history books. And it's about the Ohio National Guard being under attack, which is complete, that there was sniper fire. Well, they created the sniper fire. And so we take a look at their story, and nothing holds water, and they don't want anyone looking at it. This is a linchpin to all the wrongs that have been done in the last 42 years.
You mentioned Dennis Kucinich became involved.
He was on Cleveland City Council when Kent State happened. He
was
the youngest city council person, 23 years old, when May 4th, 1970 happened. He immediately mobilized. This has been key to him. I don't have to ever worry about him being bought off or coming from the wrong place. He is tried and true now. He has lost the primary in Ohio. I hope he goes to Washington State. I'm a fan. Dennis Kucinich rocks.
What about Marcy Kaptur, who defeated him? She had a pretty, I mean, compared to other members of Congress, a fairly progressive record.
No one touches Kent State. It doesn't really help anyone. The only person that I can call, the guy in Florida.
Alan Grayson?
Yes. He has spoken repeatedly for Kent State. And he's another one of these politicians that I would trust. There are very few. You know, we're really, you know, not in a good situation, progressives in America. And the reason why we're bringing up this issue with Kent State is we have noticed that the U.S. government is now putting Occupy protesters in the crosshairs. And the reason why they can do that and the way that they're managing Kent State are all intertwined. You see, the U.S. government will never refer to Kent State as a murder or homicide situation. They keep pointing to it being civil rights. Well, the civil rights were the least of the things my sister lost that day, along with Jeff Miller, Bill Schroeder and Sandy Scheuer. They lost their lives that day. And we want the U.S. government to acknowledge that life was lost, not the civil rights. The civil rights was tried. It was settled. But my sister is still dead.
Yeah, yeah.
And until the U.S. government acknowledges that they killed dissenters, unarmed protesters in America, on college campus at noon, until they decide to do that, every protester that's out on the street is at risk.
Well, the new National Defense Authorization Act that President Obama signed, which makes America part of the world battlefield and makes off limits any area which should be legitimate protest around a political event, whether it's Republican or Democratic National Convention, anything that is declared a significant event, this can happen, could happen again.
Well, here's my comment to President Obama. Does he want the baby boomer vote? Does he want us to come out for him again? Because if he wants our vote so bad, well, then he better take a look at Kent State and actually look at this. This was a historic event. People were killed and wounded for the rest of their lives. They have carried horrible wounds. They have health problems forever. And until he decides to acknowledge that the First Amendment rights do not exist in America and actually tried to figure out a way to empower us and give us our rights back, I don't think any baby boomer should vote for him. What are you voting for? Are you voting for more of the same in this police state? Because he's behind it.
Well, we the last two guests I've had on my program, William Arkin, who co-authored Top Secret America, and Francis Boyle, who talked about the National Defense Authorization Act, says exactly what you're saying. It's Tweedledee and Tweedledum. And actually, things have gotten worse in terms of civil rights under Obama.
Well, Obama continues to sign these things and then pretend like he hasn't. And everyone is like, oh, yeah, but he did a signing statement. Who cares about a signing statement? The fact is he signed those into law. He put his signature on it. He really did it.
He put his signature on it. My guess is Laurel Krauss. I was happy to see the CNN report. Were there, what about other reports? You must have scanned on the anniversary of the murder, the massacre. How else did you see the press recovering this?
Well, we had that fabulous show on Project Censored on KPFA,
yeah,
and I encourage everyone to go see that. And they're going to be doing an extensive series with us. They decided on that show we're going to be doing interviews with Stuart Allen. I'd also like to talk about the Kent State Truth Tribunal, and there was this phenomenal eyewitness that came forward who I've never heard before. She was mesmerizing in talking about what she experienced at May 4th, 1970. And so we're going to be doing that, and and we're also going to be part of the Project Censored book for 2012. But I really want to go back to who was behind Kent State, because this is where I've been really focusing my energy, just, you know, really going into really who called the shots. And it's the same people calling the shots today. Basically, when my sister was on that campus that day, she died for peace. She wanted the war to stop. She was protesting against the Cambodian invasion. She was protesting against the draft. She was also protesting about the military occupation of her campus that day. It was noon. Children, 19 and 20-year-olds, 21-year-olds, were changing classes when the National Guard shot on a campus. They had every right to be there.
The people that really benefited the most from the outcome of what happened at Kent State was the Pentagon.
They are running President Obama round the corner each day. He does their everything for them. He never says no to anything the Department of Defense wants. They have a $700 billion budget every year. They don't have to account for a penny. They've never passed an audit. The next audit that they have to prepare for is 2014. It got moved from 2017. I want it to be at the end of this year. How dare we give them that kind of money and they account for nothing while they rule our world?
Well, if you read the small print because you don't, or I follow it online, you have members of Congress are object to any kind of cutting of the military budget, particularly when it affects their territory. Well, Laurel, I'm very glad that you are here and doing this. in our county, and I'm glad that I contacted you and invited you to be on our program. And you have truthtribunal.org is your website?
Yes, and anyone can go there and look at the press page, and you can see everything that we've written, as well as you can see some testimonials that we've worked on. We have about 15 there. You can listen to my mom. You can listen to Dean Kaler, Joe Lewis, me. Actually, watch it. It's not just audio. And you can get a taste of what we've been working on for the last couple of years.
And go to michaelmoore.com and find out what's going on, right?
Certainly. I publish a lot there, and I hope to continue. I have a comment. Neil Young has a performance film coming out next month, at the end of next month. It's a Jonathan Demme performance film. Centerpiece to the film is a new rendition by Neil Young of Ohio. And they have the footage of Kent State, and it is very moving because it really shows this brute force in the middle of the day on a college campus where they came with guns and they shot students.
Well, Laurel, thank you so much for being our guest today on Takes on the World, and keep on keeping on. You're
so
doing a great job.
To be here. Thank you.
Our pleasure. Thanks. Take care. And that was Laurel Krauss, sister of Alison Krauss, murdered by the U.S. government in May 4th, 1970.
And that was Jeffrey Blankford, host of a biweekly radio program on KZYX in Mendocino County, touched by the memory of that day at Kent State, that he and also I are old enough to remember so personally. In different places, he and I, and maybe you too, were part of the movement against the war on Vietnam. The refusal by the Department of Justice on April 23, 2012, to reveal the truth is very troublesome as it comes under the Obama administration and at a time where the Occupy movement is meeting some of the most violent police tactics of recent years. So please follow the efforts of survivors and family of the unresolved Kent State murders on the links that were just given, above all on www.truthtribunal.org, maintained by Alison Krauss's sister, Laurel Krauss. You can hear this program again on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. That's tucradio.org. Look under newest programs. TUC Radio has moved to Northern California. This program was produced off the grid with solar power. Contact TUC Radio by calling 1-707-463-2654. That's 707-463-2654. Or write to us. The address is TUC Radio, Post Office Box 44, Calpella, California 95418. And the zip again is 95418 in Calpella, California. TUC Radio is free to all radio stations and depends on the support of listeners like you. Your donation on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org, keeps this program on the air. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.